So for the remainder of services, we'll hear from our pastor, Mr. Stephen LeBlanc.
Thank you, Mr. Alton. Yes, so much to tell you, so much to go over. Today, I wanted to focus on why prophecy, particularly what's going on in the world today. And I have many handouts, so I want you to see visually maps, because God talks so often in prophecy about the north or the south in relationship to Jerusalem, kings of the east, the Euphrates River. We really need to be aware of where these locations are. And Americans, we're just not focused that much on the rest of the world. So I wanted to update you regarding prophecy. But prophecy is there to greatly encourage us, because Christ is going to return to this earth and resolve all the craziness and stop all the suffering. But before he comes, prophecy is there to warn us, to make us to be sober. And even in the church, as the years go by, it could just seem like, well, that's yet off in the future, or I'll be okay, everything's okay. I fear God, I'm close to God. And we can enter into, you know, just a period of sleep. It's very easy to do. As a matter of fact, at church at the end time is described in Matthew 25 as coming out of sleep. The 10 virgins, they're all asleep, aren't they? Some wake up, some never really wake up. So prophecy is there to warn us, to jolt us, to grab our attention, to make us be just a bit afraid, even in the church, not panicky, not trying to predict dates, not running out immediately on Monday to the store to buy as much foodstuffs as possible. Obviously, we need to be prepared. I'm not saying we're never to be prepared, physically speaking, but it's there to point us in the direction that we need to take a look at our spiritual lives and take our spiritual lives very seriously, because we have a window of time now. We don't know how long that window of time will last before it closes. And when it closes very suddenly. And the scripture talks about when all hell breaks loose, it'll happen very, very quickly and catch people off guard. Even those in the church, apparently, many are caught off guard and are not accounted worthy to escape. So it's sobering, but it has its place. So we're going to be talking a bit about what's going on in the world today. So I'm just going to go through some of these handouts. Those of you listening in will get most of this in the mail. So Corey, can you help me out with the first handout? And I know it's a lot, but you can handle it. You're tough people and intelligent people. You know, I tell these people who come to these prophecy studies and these people who are interested in prophecy, you have to get a map. You've got to have a good world map. Prophecy is a lot about the nations of the world. God is tribal. He's very tribal. It's not my agenda. He's constantly talking in prophecy about the tribes of Israel at the time of the end, or Edom, or Egypt, or the king of the north, the king of the south, the Euphrates River, the great Assyrian dictator, who we believe is going to be a Germanic dictator at the time of the end. He talks a lot about, obviously, the end time counterfeit church, which is a whore, very blunt language he uses, all these places that exist. So we want to be aware. You don't have to know where every nation is on the map, but I want you to take a look at the map. And you can see here, first of all, the United States is in this wonderful position, unique in the world, in that it is protected by two massive oceans. So if somebody wants to attack us, obviously they could send missiles over, understand that, but to get troops onto our soil requires a real big effort. It can, and we believe it will happen, but we are protected by two great oceans. Canada to the north is a friend, Mexico is a friend as well, relatively speaking. I know we have our squabbles, and I know there are many illegals trying to cross over into the United States and are very successful in doing that. But for the most part, we don't have to worry about enemies where we are. Take a look at Europe, which is constantly involved in war. You can see how compact Europe is in that square as they produce it. Okay. And they never know whether to put Moscow as part of Europe or not. And maps will differ. Because Moscow, it's more of a European-like city, but it's Eurasian, a little bit of a different history. And they always have trouble. Well, what do we say about Moscow? Europe, the European Union today is 27 member states. 27 member states, population of 450 million people. America has a population of about 335 million people. So they have a bigger population. They produce gross domestically, produce more than we produce. They're very wealthy, actually. People don't know that as a union as a whole. So, of course, we pay attention to Europe, and I'll get into that. Look at Russia. Look how big Russia is, kind of in pink. 11 time zones, 144 million people, the biggest exporters or seller of wheat in the world today. This is why Vladimir Putin wields so much power on the world stage. Also, Russia's the biggest producer of natural gas for many of the nations of Europe, including Germany, which is heavily dependent upon Russian natural gas to heat their homes. So there's a lot of worry in the European papers. What are we going to do this winter if Russia decides to close the spigot completely? We won't have natural gas to heat our homes. So Germany and other nations in Europe, Italy and Germany in particular, are scrambling to find alternative sources for natural gas so they can heat their homes. Doesn't sound like a big thing to us because we don't have to worry about that here in America, but it's a big issue over there. And Germany's not ready for what has taken place. So there's a lot of tension in Europe. When there's a lot of tension in Europe, you can see political change or desire for political change. If you see unemployment rise in Europe, people will be pounding the table to see new leadership in Europe. So the leadership structure in Europe is very fragile right now. Doesn't mean the whole world's going to go to war, but it's just very fragile and worth taking note of, because we know eventually from prophecy, which we'll take a look at today, we're going to see a European dictator come to power. We normally say the European dictator comes to power during a time of crisis. They want a strong leader. They want a charismatic leader. That would seem to make sense. This is how Hitler came to power. When Hitler ran in 1928, this was before the crash of the 1929 stock market, he only got about 2% of the vote. Everybody thought he was a strange guy. They didn't pay much attention to him. In 1930, when he ran, a couple of years later, all of a sudden, all of Germany was paying attention to him because he was promising jobs. He was promising to put an end to massive inflation in Germany. He was promising to fight the Communist Party, which was big in Germany in 1930, and to create a peace in Germany. There's a lot of chaos in the streets. They were fighting in 29 and 30 right in the streets of Germany. You just have these big brawls in Berlin and Munich. I mean, you can actually see footage of this. So when life becomes incredibly unstable, and when there seems to be a lack of direction, people cry out for new leadership. We're not there yet in Europe, but we're very close. But I don't know what's going to happen over the next months. Clearly, Vladimir Putin is threatening Europe. Not that he's going to invade Germany. He's not that foolish. But he could invade, this is the worry, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, these little Baltic countries. altogether don't even amount to 9 million people. You can hardly locate them on the map, just below Finland. Obviously, we know Sweden and Finland want to become part of NATO, so there are big changes going on in the world right now, and I wanted you to see that. The big concern right now for Europe, and you read of this in the European papers, and it's coming out of the United Nations as well, is that there is a famine that is coming in the next couple of months. It's not if, it is coming, because grain, Russian grain and Ukrainian grain, cannot leave ports, particularly out of Odessa, which they normally go through the Black Sea and then on into other locations into Europe and particularly to the Middle East. So Middle East countries already, the cost of wheat, which is a primary product they use in wheat bread, like in Egypt, big wheat, what do they call it? It's like pita bread, but they eat it every day. It's a major staple in Egypt, which has 105 million people. They know prices are almost doubling for wheat products. And couscous, which is very popular in the Middle East. And even in Turkey, I heard wheat prices have gone up over 100%. You know, the average person in the street says, whoa, stop, wait a minute. This is crazy. We can't pay these prices. These are relatively poor nations. And then they expect their governments to step in and say, you know, subsidize or do something, we can't pay these prices. But the governments in these nations in the Middle East can't afford to just constantly subsidize wheat prices to such a degree. Then you get mass rallies. And this is what every leader in Europe, in Russia, and the Middle East fears when people take to the streets. 20,000, 40,000, 50,000, 100,000, or even 1 million people. That's when all these leaders go into panic mode, because how do you control masses of people who are protesting wheat prices or gasoline prices? See, we don't deal with that over. So we're naive, to be blunt. We're just naive. Doesn't mean we're bad. We're just kind of naive. I don't mean we're not having problems in other ways. We are, and we have our riots, and we will have more of those for other reasons. But we are so blessed where over there it is a singular problem. So the worry is when the famine hits, famine, lack of food, lack of bread, lack of grain, barley as well, corn as well, when famine hits, in these Middle Eastern nations, the expectation is tens of thousands of migrants from the Middle East will once again seek safe haven in Europe. You see? So now you're going to get a swell of migrants again trying to go into Europe. And this scares Europeans, because how do you stop these people? It's not like you have walls all through Europe, separating Europe from Turkey. They mainly go through Turkey, or walls separating them from going into Bulgaria and some of these other nations, you see. So you get this swarm of people, and it could be millions of people. And already you have literally 6 to 8 million people who have fled Ukraine to get into Europe. They're in these other European nations. You see what happens? Well, it would be like here if in your neighborhood, all of a sudden, you know, you had, I don't know if you're a little town, let's say Ripon here, what are you, 15,000 people? If you had 4,000 people from the Middle East all of a sudden come in and looking for housing, and they set up big tents and everything to take care of them, I'm sure the residents of Ripon are going to be concerned, and they're going to be very concerned about their home prices falling. Let's face it, if you own a home, you got a bunch of migrants moving into your neighborhood, no way, Jose, because your property values fall. You see what happens? This is very serious what's taking place. I don't know how bad it will all be and what, you know, is going to take place as a result. So right-wing parties in Europe are sending the message no more migrants. Corey, if you could do this. No more migrants. We're not going to accept it. Here is an ad from the Alternative of Germany party, the right-wing party of Germany, very anti-migrant. Now, they blurred out the woman who was painted by a French artist in 1866. It depicts a historical event of when Ottoman Turkey once controlled large swaths of southern Europe and sold white women as slaves. It happened. Okay? So, brilliant ad. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's brilliant, and it's going to get the attention of Germans. And the ad shows the white woman being sold as a slave by Arabs. It's saying, we can't let these people into our country. This isn't a dog whistle. This is going to happen if we keep letting Arabs into our country. Germany, population 83 million. They have about 6 million Muslims in Germany now. So it's a fear ad. It's a very effective fear ad. We got to stop this. So in North Africa, between 1530 and 1780, over a million European Christians were enslaved by Muslims. You see the fear? See why they're afraid? Okay. You don't want 1,000 or 1,500 Muslims who fleeing all the problems, and it's very sad. You don't want them placed in Riverbank, do you? You know, because your property values in Riverbank are going to go down. Okay? It's a reality. So that's what's going on in Europe. So there's going to be another invasion from North Africa, from Syria, from Iraq, from Afghanistan, from Egypt, when the famine hits. But again, we don't know how big the invasion will be. But it's in the European papers are talking about it. Even the United Nations is talking about it. I have so many quotes. I don't want to, you know, I think I already have so much here. It can almost be a little bit too much. So I'm going to show historically, because now we're going to talk about the King of the North and the King of the South. Why do we use those definitions? There are historical patterns and reasons Mr. Armstrong came to understand who the King of the North is, who the King of the South is. This is a historical visual of what happened hundreds of years ago, how Islam at the time almost conquered most of Europe. So, Corey, another map here. I want you to see this. So when we use the expressions King of the North, King of the South, we do so for a reason. We don't pull it out of thin air. It has historical meaning, and it's clear from prophecy what we're dealing with. Okay? So I just want you to see that. And you can make your way over to Daniel 11 and verse 40. And I believe in Oklahoma you have this map. So in red, you see there were hundreds of years where the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Islamic Empire, went on into Europe itself, okay, conquered Greece, conquered Bosnia-Herzegovina and Croatia, and actually went into and conquered part of Austria, just a small part, conquered Hungary and Romania. And if God didn't stop the invasion, they probably would have taken over much of, probably all of Austria, even Poland, and maybe even Germany. But God stopped that invasion. That's in red. In green, and we've mailed this out to you, those of you, some of you, hopefully it got to you by Sabbath. If it didn't, you'll see this map. Then in green, you can see where they conquered all of Spain and much of France, but they were defeated by Charles Martel, one of the great European kings of the North, at the Battle of Tours in 732. I just want you to get the visual. It's a very well done map. I know The writing in white is a little hard to see, but I pulled it off the internet and is very well done. So the pattern through history in Daniel 11 is the king of the south, an Islamic power south of Jerusalem, pushes at or attacks Europe. And you see this all throughout history, back and forth, back and forth. And there was a movie, I believe it was called Kingdom of Heaven. It's a very interesting movie. And it talks about the crusade to take control of Jerusalem and how Catholic Europe was fighting against the takeover of much of Southern Europe and Jerusalem by the world of Islam. So the world of Islam was very, very strong at one time. So these are the patterns. The king of the south, at the time of the end, you're going to find an Islamic leader, a type of Mahdi, who will galvanize the Islamic world. Such a leader, we don't know who he is today. He may be alive today. I think he is, but there's no great Islamic leader now. There's no Osama bin Laden or Abdel Nasser of Egypt, who was very popular at one time. You don't have a very popular Arab leader that's going to unite the Arab world at this time. But we could see one soon. So I'm just showing you the history behind the prophecy, why we use those expressions, king of the north, king of the south. Herbert Armstrong was writing about this back in the late 1830s and had all the major pieces of the puzzle right going way back then. And a man called Hal Lindsey eventually took some of Mr. Armstrong's material, left some, took some of it, and then came out with Great Late Planet Earth, which was a huge prophecy bestseller. Do you remember name Hal Lindsey? Do any of you remember that name? He's still alive, Hal Lindsey. And what you see today in many of the prophecy magazines are almost industries now regarding prophecy out there. And a lot of what they say, it's almost like they took it from a Plain Truth magazine back in 1974. But then they'll add their little twist here and there. They got that from Herbert Armstrong. Finally, they came around because they made fun of us. What do you mean? Germany was defeated in World War II. It's barely functioning. It's divided. It's East and West Germany. And they'll never rise again. They learn their lesson. They're so beaten down. And so they never thought Europe would rise again when Herbert Armstrong said, and I'm not putting him on a pedestal, it's just a fact, he said, even when Hitler was losing the war, he said, Europe will rise again and Germany will rise again. He was right, because he understood the prophecy. He had that insight. I told you Billy Graham, not that Billy Graham carries a great amount of weight, but Billy Graham, I think he was a sincere man, believed Herbert Armstrong had the gift for prophecy. And he told Herbert Armstrong that. I think they spoke twice. Herbert Armstrong talked about it. I guess he got a phone call and it was Billy Graham. And Billy Graham said, hello, fine, wonderful to talk to you, Dr. Armstrong. And they talked for a few minutes. I think that they had a conversation two different times. But Billy Graham was trying to bring everybody together. Okay, he believed Oral Roberts had the kind of the gift for healing. Then Herbert Armstrong was the person who understood and had clear insight from God regarding prophecy. Well, he's probably right on that in terms of understanding prophecy. So we are so familiar with this, it could almost be, oh yeah, I know. But this absolute horrific storm is coming and we don't know when it will hit us. But I wanted you to see the visual, okay? That's why when we go to Daniel 11, go to Daniel chapter 11. Daniel 11. There's a reason why we are so confident in who the king of the south is. In a general sense, speaking of an Islamic power, and who the king of the north is, which would be a European power. Okay, so let me get there. Does this make sense? I hope it makes sense, because you've heard this for years, And I wanted you to see the history behind it. So remember Daniel in Daniel 10? He goes on a three-week fast, and he's trying to understand the future of Israel. And then Gabriel appears to him, and the truth is revealed, and God responds to the fasting of Daniel, and Daniel's greatly beloved. And then God reveals this incredible prophecy, which is the longest prophecy in the Bible, okay? So in chapter 11, it goes through the prophecy, and I'm not going to go through all of the prophecy. It talks about the king of the north, king of the south. Jerusalem was the center place, the pivot to the north. You had Antiochus and the kingdom of Syria, but eventually the kingdom of Syria was controlled by the Roman Empire, and then the Roman Empire became the king of the north. That can be easily proved, but I don't really have time to get into that today. Let's go right to the prophecy at the time of the end. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, verse 40. King of the south shall attack him. At the time of the end, the king of the south, this Islamic leader, there's going to be an Islamic leader, the king of the south, because that was the pattern all throughout history. Islam always was fighting Europe because Islam wants to make Europe its own. Today, there are over 50 million Muslims in Europe today, 22 million Muslims in Russia, over 6 million Muslims in France, Germany, 82, 83 million people, 6 million are Muslims. And England has many Muslims. You go to most European cities, you'll see Muslims. You'll see women wearing the hijab. You don't see too many burqas, though. That you don't see, but I don't think it would be allowed in many of these places. Now, in Poland, you don't see Muslims. You know why? Because they don't allow Muslims. You're not welcome. It just doesn't happen, okay? And the Poles are highly criticized by the Germans. Poland, very interesting nation, population of 38 million. You just don't. And you don't see many Jews there either. So many Jews lived in Poland, but they were killed in the Second World War. And it's just, you know, most Jews aren't going to say, well, let's move back to Poland. It just doesn't work. That's a unusual country, the most Catholic nation in Europe, meaning the most dedicated, very dedicated. They go to mass on a more regular basis than the Italians. Poles, very, very, very dedicated people. Okay, so we will get to this. So the scenario is Muslim armies want to push or fight or go after Europe again. And it's part of Islamic doctrine for Islam to conquer the whole world. This is why, like in France, in the outskirts of Paris, you have these enclaves where you just don't go because they're controlled by a Muslim, you know, Sharia government in these little mini enclaves in parts of Paris. Even in London, you have to be a little bit careful where you go. Okay, so I just wanted to point that out. Let's get to the prophecy. We'll just go through it. At the time of the end, the king of the south, this Muslim Mahdi is a type of Islamic savior. This king shall attack him, the king of the north, attack this European power, this future European dictator. Finally, the king of the north has had enough. Let's go right into the Middle East. We'll sweep in with men, many ships. We'll enter into the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. And this king of the north will then, verse 41, enter the glorious land, and many countries will be overthrown. We're not there yet. We don't have a European dictator yet. I don't think we'll see who he is for another year or two or three. I don't know. We don't predict dates, but this king of the north, king of the south, king of the north, king of the south, king of the north, Europe, king of the south, Islam. They don't get along well. They don't work together. They fight against each other, you see. So this is important to appreciate what is going to happen. So I have another map. I'm mapping you to death, but that's okay. Just give you the big pieces of the puzzle. Something I hand out at the prophecy study, help people to understand. I like this map because it shows the Euphrates River. So it's good to know where Germany is. Good to know where the Euphrates River is, because Revelation talks about the Euphrates River. 200 million men cross that river. It's in Iraq. Okay. It's good to know where Egypt is. The king of the south, the next Islamic dictator, could be from Egypt. Biggest Arab country in the world, 105 million people. Could be from Saudi Arabia. We don't know. There's no leader that stands out yet. Sisi of Egypt, he's a strong leader in Egypt, but he's not really respected that much throughout the rest of the Arab world. So you can see, right, what happens. He, the European beast power, will enter the glorious land, Daniel 11, verse 41. Okay? Because the king of the south has provoked him. I need to put that on the map. Then where Russia comes in, if you read through Daniel 11, let's begin in verse 40 again. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, the king of the north. So the king of the south, this Islamic leader, is going to attack this European dictator. And this European dictator, the king of the north, shall come against the king of the south like a whirlwind. He'll say, I've had enough of this. We're going to go right into the Middle East. And he'll attack with many ships and enter many countries. This begins the great end time war sequence, okay? When the king of the south pushes against this future European dictator, this begins the real intense sequence. And then we know Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. He will stretch out his hand, this king of the north, this European dictator, against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So he moves even into Egypt. This is major, major war between Islam and Europe that is ahead of us. How does Islam push? Could it be a series of terrorist strikes in European capitals? Remember back a few years ago, there were strikes in Paris, Brussels, right at the airport. You fly into, there was a major terrorist strike. When those terrorist strikes take place in Europe, people get really scared. They close everything down. Will they attack again that way? Will it be some other type of attack? But there's some type of an attack from this Islamic leader. Verse 44 is where we believe Russia comes in. You can go back to the old Plain Truth magazines. We still teach the same thing. So when Europe enters into the Middle East to take control of Israel, to stop the daily sacrifices, all of that will take place. Finally, China and Russia will say, well, wait a minute, you're just not able to walk into the Middle East, take control of kind of the oil center, take control of one of the great religious centers of the world, Jerusalem, and we're going to sit here and be passive. It doesn't work that way. So when this European dictator enters into Jerusalem, then we find that Russia, verse 44, the north, news from Russia, and also from the east, which would be China, because then those two neighbors will get together to go fight against this European beast dictator. Do you see the big piece of the puzzle here? It makes a lot of sense. Just like today, you see Russia and China. I wouldn't call them friends, but they're allies over Ukraine. So this is what takes place. Verse 44, news from the east, China, news from the north. Russia shall trouble this end-time dictator Therefore, he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. And this is when you get into this huge end time final world war. Okay. Starts with Islam pushing or aggravating or attacking Europe. Then it quickly spreads. And there's a lot of anger positioning. The demons are working at this point in time at full capacity, stirring up the leaders and the nations. Then you have this massive world war. And we often taught in the old literature, of course, by this time, the United States has gotten its head pounded. So by this time, by the time the final war ends, that last, you know, year or so when that great war is taking place, and around that time, America's so beaten down because of famine, pestilence, war, that we, you know, captivity, we're not making much noise at that particular time, which would make a lot of sense. That's the hardest thing for these people who come to the prophecy studies, that America's going to be punished to that degree. They think America will be punished, but you mean that captivity? That's too much for them. They can't, they just, because they're walking by sight. We got the biggest navy, we got the biggest army, we've got the most technologically sophisticated weaponry, but God can get rid of that quickly. Other prophecies indicate that great pestilence will sweep through our nation. So the big storm's coming. We've been waiting for years, and we should be sobered by it, not terrified, but sobered, to make sure we put our own individual houses in order and draw close to God to please him. So in Luke 21:36, that we could be accounted worthy to escape all of these things that are to come to pass. So just getting back one more handout, just one. You have this already, but I wanted to show you again. So right now the concern is when famine hits or social unrest really takes root in Egypt, in Iraq again, in Syria, in Afghanistan, that these people, because they're trying to survive, where are they going to head to? Europe, right? They're not going to head to Russia. It's too cold. It's too difficult. They're going to go to Europe. Let's take a look at the flip side where it has the migration map. That's what they're scared of, because it is going to happen. It's still happening, but it's just not in massive numbers like it was years ago. Okay. Sorry, I should have had that for everybody, and maybe even on the internet. Just sometimes you just run out of time. So Turkey is significant because there are 4 million refugees camped in Turkey right now, taken care of by Erdogan of Turkey, the leader of Turkey, in these huge tent cities. But the European Union is paying Erdogan so many billion dollars every year to keep them in Turkey. Because if they want to cross from Turkey over through Bulgaria or through Greece, or how do you stop these people? You can't stop them. Well, you could shoot them and kill them, or when they're in their boats, you know, you've seen those boats that look ready to capsize and so on. You could blow those up, but they're not going to do that. You can't stop it, okay? There's no big wall system all throughout Europe. In certain areas, yes, they have fences. Hungary doesn't want anybody. The Poles don't want anyone. And the refugees know that. So they want to get to Germany, where they're taken care of. They want to get to Great Britain, where they're taken care of. Or France or Belgium, maybe even Sweden. And that's been a disaster. So when you have all that unrest and upset, and then people get angry and they take to the streets, you're going to be looking for a strong man, right? You're looking for a strong leader. Macron is not that leader. He's trying to be that, but he's not the leader. There's just been a rotation of the Italian government. Draghi, it didn't go well for him. That's collapsed here in the past week. Of course, you know that England is looking for a new prime minister. Boris Johnson is out. Goofy guy doing goofy things, to be frank. Colorful figure, but he things he should have really not allowed, but he just kind of turned a blind eye again and again. We don't know who the leader will be there. Macron doesn't have the support he once had 4 or 5 years ago, even though he still leads France. So you have these changes underway, you see, and it's becoming more and more unstable. It does not mean the whole world is going to collapse. We don't know how bad this famine will be. Turkey's key because it's the spigot that controls all of this. So Turkey can pretty much write its own ticket with the European Union. Okay? Turkey's part of the European Union, but it's not respected by the Union. And it doesn't have free rights of passage to get into Europe. It's a complicated situation there because the Turks they're more Arab background, right? A lot of Edomites in Turkey. Prophetically, you're dealing with Edomites. And you may say, well, this is all boring. Well, God didn't think it was boring. I know this isn't always the most exciting subject, and I don't talk about it that often. And I just wanted to cover it today because, you know, the church has understanding in this, so we need to warn. And this is part of why we warn and why this is so very, very, you know, important to appreciate what's taking place over in Europe today and why Vladimir Putin wields so much power. Now, Germany is debating what to do. Germany's trying to please Russia enough because it needs Russian natural gas and oil for industry. At the same time, it's talking tough against Russia, and it does involve itself in sanctions against Russia to show it's part of NATO. So they're kind of in the middle there, and they can't seem to please anyone. You see, prophetically speaking, God can stir up adversaries, 1 Corinthians 11. The Lord stirred up an adversary against Solomon, verse 14. 1 Kings 11 and verse 23, God raised up another adversary against King Solomon. So God stirs up adversaries, nation against nation. We don't see what's happening at the spirit level, but clearly a lot is going on, and there could be spirit wars. Probably spirit wars are underway right now, because Daniel 10 tells us that's something that takes place. It's ongoing. Angels and demons warring over territory here on earth, though we don't see it. Daniel chapter 4 and verse 17, where we're told the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. It doesn't mean he agrees with their decisions. He gives the kingdoms to whomever he will and sets over it the lowest of men. So where does Vladimir Putin fit into that and other leaders around Europe? Not that the Ukrainian leadership is necessarily untainted with their sins. I mean, God sees all of this, and there's so much going on right now. Remember Zechariah chapter 1 and verse 14. Zechariah 1 and verse 14. God says, I am jealous for Jerusalem. Any nation that tries to tamper with Jerusalem or take control of it or tell Jerusalem what to do, whether it could be any nation, it could even be the United States, it could be Europe, the Vatican. Catholic Church believes Jerusalem belongs to them. They believe a lot of that ground belongs to them for religious reasons. But whoever thinks Jerusalem belongs to them, they better be very careful what they do. Jerusalem has its sins. The Jews have their sins. Let God correct them. You don't want to get near the Jews. There are too many prophecies. God's going to correct them. stay out of it. You're not the expert when it comes to the Jews. You're not the expert on why the Holocaust happened, okay? That horror, that nightmare, which is going to happen again. So myself, I know they're going to be corrected, and I talk about that, but I don't, you know, not that you can't tell people their sins either, but you have to be very careful. You see in the scripture, God, he deals with Jerusalem, and there's another prophecy that talks about it's like a heavy stone, and God gets very angry with the nations that try to play with Jerusalem in any way, shape, or form. So stay away from Jerusalem. Let's go to Zechariah 12. So God's very interested in the tribes, the nations of the world. He's very country-oriented. Prophecy is filled with it. Of course, people can go overboard on prophecy. I understand that. But it is there to warn. It's not there to entertain. It's there to warn us, to strike fear in us. But it's hard for Americans to become fearful. You know, we don't have to worry about our heaters going on during the wintertime. And if the heaters go out, it's for a brief period of time, right? Electricity's there. We have the air conditioning for the most part. But in other places of the world, it's not a given. We always have plenty of bread. There's always food at the stores. And not only food, but a great variety of food. It's just so hard for us. Okay, we need to get to Zechariah 12. Zechariah 12. Now, verse 2. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding people when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. So the nations will once again try to take control of Judah and Jerusalem. Jerusalem will be surrounded by armies. And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all the peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it. Just stay away. If God's correcting Jerusalem, so be it. That is not, in a sense, for me to get into great commentary on. He will deal with that in a different way. Not that the law is different. I don't mean it's different, but that it's, you're getting to the apple of his eye, and it's a different situation, and that is yet to come. So these are the things yet ahead of us. Right now, we don't have a leader in Europe that we know of that fits that descriptive of being a very powerful leader. Let's go to Daniel 11 again. I believe the man's alive. I don't know who he is. And of course, the churches of God are constantly trying to guess, or, oh, did you hear about this person? Oh, did you hear about that person? And I understand that. We're human. We have some interest, of course. But he will be what he will be. Probably won't be anybody we anticipate either. It's not going to be some name necessarily making all the rounds on the websites of the world. You know, usually when something drastic hits, it comes out of nowhere. Like COVID, right? Nobody was predicting COVID. Nobody predicted 9/11. Okay. None of the guru prophets out there, in or out of the church, predicted those things. Remember, there are going to be a lot of false prophets at the time of the end, deceiving many people. So if you take a look at this, at verse 33, at the time of the end, there will be, 11:33, those of the people who understand shall instruct many. Yet for many days they shall fall by sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. So those who know the truth will be able to instruct many, but it's going to be a time of captivity, sword, and flame. It's going to be a horrific time. Okay. And in verse 35, this is frightening. Some of those of understanding shall fall. Scary, isn't it? To refine them. Not that they won't have eternal life, but people have to be purged and refined in the church. It's going to take place. Okay. Because it is still for the appointed time. Then the king, speaking of this great end time Hitler-like figure out of Europe, verse 36, then the king shall do according to his own will. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished. So he will prosper politically, economically, militarily. Revelation 18 is just a great description of end-time European economic powerhouse. America will not be that powerhouse. Eventually, our economic power will wither. Could be pestilence, disease, war. It could be a combination of things. We are going down, and it'll shock people. It'll frighten people because we just have never, well, I don't know of anybody who was around during the Great Depression. So maybe if you went through the Great Depression, you could say, well, I understand a little bit what it could be like. Okay. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He will prosper. Verse 37, he will regard neither the gods of his fathers nor the desire of women, nor regard any god. He's so puffed up, he is a Hitler-like figure. Verse 38, but in their place he shall honor a god of fortresses. So this European leader may be a charismatic political leader at first, and may even seem to be for peace, but he turns and becomes aggressive in terms of military pursuit, okay? And it's going to be a frightening time. So we're waiting for that dictator to come on the world stage. He's described again in Daniel 8. We don't know who he is. We've always thought most likely he would be Germanic in some way. There are other prophecies that back that up, but maybe from Germany or Austria or a lot of German blood in some fashion. Verse 23 of Daniel 8. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when transgressors have reached their fullness, so transgressors have not reached their fullness yet, it'll get worse. The crazy laws and rules and behaviors of people, okay? As you can see, I mean, just the whole transgender push now on our culture and on much of the European culture, all of these things will get worse. All types of crimes. In murders, in adulteries, in abortions, all of that will escalate. At the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king, a great end time leader, a European dictator, shall come to power having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. If you take a look at the prototypes of the kings of the north in the past, Antiochus, Epiphanes, they talk peace, but they scheme to wage war. And they lie, like Hitler pretty much promised peace to Neville Chamberlain and others. But of course, he had no intention of peace. You're going to get somebody who promises peace. No doubt will be a charismatic leader, European figure. But he will understand sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Satan will be behind him. Revelation 13 talks about that. Revelation 13, I believe it's in verse 4, says, and who can make war with the beast? So Europe right now is not bent on big armies and let's fight. But what happened back in February with the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, it has scared Europe, and particularly it has woken up the German leadership, realizing we can't rely on anybody else. We thought we could contain Putin, you know, through treaties and business deals, but we can't. And we have neglected the German military, you know, house for many years. We've got to pour money into building up our army. It takes a few years. They're not going to build it up in 1 year. It's not going to happen in 1 year, no matter how much we think we're at the time of the end, and we are. And they've got the know-how, but it takes time. I don't know if it'll take 2 or 3 years, and the Germans are fast. Everything I've read, it just takes time to upgrade the equipment. I mean, some of their weaponry has been so unattended to. According to them, according to their generals, they're almost embarrassed with their military. But that doesn't bother us. We know prophecy will come to pass. And they'll turn things around quickly. They've got the know-how. It's now the money, and then you have to hire skilled people to do it. You know, most German men don't grow up saying, oh, you know, maybe I'll join the military as a career. They don't think that way. They can make much better money in other fields and other work areas of Germany. Okay, you don't make a lot of money going into the German army, because Germany, ever since World War II, has been so careful to present themselves as kind of peaceful. We never want to go back to what happened, and we're going to be very careful. They became very pacifist, but now that's turning around because they have to. And of course, God determines the timing of these things, and whatever demonic power is allowed to do whatever he does at the time. That's where all these decisions are made. That's where the big changes happen. Not here on planet Earth, up in that realm where the angels and the demons fight. And God gives permission, or God says, no, not now, or God says, okay. Then later on, almost as a delayed view of it, then we see things happening on the world scene. So Putin definitely has a better military, more depth than Ukraine, but perhaps God has said, no, I'm not going to let you take over all of Ukraine. No, I didn't give that to you, but I don't know. I'm not there at the throne of God, obviously. So wars aren't decided. The big wars aren't always, really aren't usually decided quite the way we think they are. It's God says, no, that's enough. And then that nation just declined. I mean, Hitler was doing real well in 1941. Then he attacks Russia. Then he tries to attack Russia before winter. I mean, if he knew history, that doesn't work. And then sure enough, the German armies got caught in the Russian winter and were destroyed. But in his mind, what that demon put in his mind, go for it, and it didn't work. Because Hitler was not given all of Europe, you know, to conquer. God said no. It's the only reason he didn't conquer all of Europe. God said no. And the demonic forces have to obey God. The horror of that war is something America is difficult even for America to appreciate or to understand. So the nations fight. And eventually this man will come to power. Verse 24, his power shall be mighty, but not by his power, by a demon spirit. He's going to destroy fearfully. Mr. Herbert Armstrong used to say, it's in some of the articles, he shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. This is going to be a great economic power. So there's going to be a great economic surge in Europe at some point. It may be 2, 3, 4 years, they just all of a sudden explode in wealth. It'll happen. And he shall destroy the mighty people, the United States, and the holy people. He'll go after the church. That's how we interpreted that. Do you see that? In verse 24, he, the beast power, will go after the mighty people, which would be the United States primarily. And also he will go after the holy people. That's how we explain that scripture. It's a pretty good explanation. Now, if things are a little bit different, if it plays out, then, you know, it'll play out the way it plays out. It wasn't, he didn't nail that down as some great doctrine that should never be changed, but that's how he viewed it, and it makes a lot of sense. Verse 25, through cunning, political cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his hand. He's a very good politician. He shall magnify himself in his heart. Most of Europe will fall in love with this guy, but then he will destroy many in their prosperity. So there's a surge of prosperity at the time of the end, brethren. So I don't know, you have flash depressions. Can you have a flash surge of prosperity? Well, in the 1920s, there's a lot of prosperity till 29 hit and had the global stock market crash. So we're going to have a surge of prosperity, certainly in Europe. That's ahead. It's not there right now, but that's ahead. These things can happen relatively quickly. And the visions of the evenings and the mornings, which was told, well, these are yet ahead. And this great dictator at the end of verse 25 of Daniel 8, he shall even rise against the prince of princes. It can only refer to Christ. So he fights Christ at his return. But he shall be broken, but without a human hand. It will take God to destroy this man, end time dictator. Which takes us over to Revelation 17. I know it's a lot, and I know you believe this, and I just thought it's because of what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, and it's summertime, and I thought it would just be a good topic to cover today. I won't be covering prophecy every week, but it has its place. It is important. It should put the fear of God in us, and we're held accountable because we understand it. And that's why we warn. So I get more and more into this on the radio program. And America will be punished. Revelation 17. All of this goes back in our literature, going back to the 1940s, 50s, 60s. I'm not presenting anything new today. It's what we've taught for years, and it made sense, and it still makes sense. If we're off a little bit, and if we're off, I would think it would only be a little bit. If we are, I'm not saying we are. You know, we'll find out at the time of the end. Revelation 17, we know this is coming. Verse 12, the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with a beast. So this European dictator is going to get the support from 10 other leaders. And we've always believed they would be European leaders because that's where the power base is. They don't need the leadership of Brazil or Ecuador, you know, to help them to be the beast power. I had to pick on Blanche there. She's from Ecuador, which that country's have a lot of trouble. I don't know what's going on there, but a lot of upheaval in Ecuador. I don't really know what's happening, but she has family there. A lot of nations are unstable right now, a lot of political drama throughout the nations. And these, so this end time European beast power, verse 14, these will make war with the Lamb. So they fight against Jesus Christ. Christ will overcome them. Remember, the saints are raptured, hate to even use that word, at Christ's return, right? I mean, or they rise from the dead or they meet Christ in the air, if they're still alive, at Christ's return. And they are with Christ when he fights against this end time dictator. You see, these will make war with the Lamb and the Lamb will overcome them. So he fights. And those who are with him are called chosen and faithful. So you got to respond to the call. I still think God's calling people, but he's calling people in a Laodicean world. So you don't see kind of much energy. Chosen. But then you have to be faithful. Let's go to Zechariah 14. So these are the big pieces of the puzzle. So the title today is Prophecy, Big Pieces. Prophecy, Big Pieces. Prophecy, Big Pieces. Let's go to Zechariah 14. I hope this makes sense, particularly why this war in Ukraine, which has so impacted the agricultural world. Two big producers of, I guess, some of the best fertilizer in the world are Russia and Belarus. So this good fertilizer isn't getting out. So nations are using lesser quality fertilizer, which means not as much of a crop production or inferior crop production. So just having such an impact in so many different ways. Zechariah 14. And then I'll close up here. Zechariah 14. The moment. great prophecy here. So Jesus Christ, in verse 4, comes and he literally stands on the Mount of Olives, which is right on the border with Jerusalem. It's really part of Jerusalem. And there's going to be a great earthquake, verse 5. Okay, super earthquake. And in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, so there was a big earthquake then. Thus the Lord my God, at the end of verse 5, will come and all the saints with you. So we're with them. That's what I mean. At the seventh trump, those who are dead in Christ will rise first. Those of you who are alive will rise as well. You know, we don't use that word rapture. That's when we rise and we meet Christ and we will be with him. We will be spirit beings when he fights. Incredible, incredible prophecy. So that is all yet ahead of us. Germany plays a big role, of course, but I want to give a prophecy sermon on the nations and the tribes like Germany, Italy, France. Where are they in prophecy? Where is Edom? Why these nations are important? Because God is very tribal. Remember what he says in Matthew 19? Matthew 19, he even knows where the tribes of Israel are at the time of the end. Matthew 19. Matthew 19. Christ said to the disciples, easy to remember because I always remember 1928, the year 1928. So Jesus said to them, assuredly, I say to you, when the Son of Man returns to the earth and he sits on the throne of his glory, you who have followed me will also sit on the 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. So he knows where those tribes are today. He knows where Reuben is. He knows where Naphtali is, where Zebulun is, where Issachar is, where Dan, where Ephraim, Manasseh. He's very tribal. He knows the Assyrians. He knows the Germans. He knows where the Edomites are. So many of the prophecies in the Bible, particularly about Edom, you could see right up to the time of the end, God's concerned about Edom and he's going to punish Edom right in an end time context. He's interested in the nation. He's interested in the tribes. What a wonderful God. Let's close with Luke 21 and verse 36. Luke 21 and verse 36, where it says, pray that you would be accounted worthy to escape all these things. Keeping the Sabbath and the holy days is good, but it's not good enough. God wants our character to be right, to be good. Read your Bible more. I think there's so much material out there. It's so easy to be reading other material. I know even myself, I can be reading world news all the time. I don't need to necessarily even be reading church literature. I believe in church literature, please understand. But sometimes, doesn't it just seem like we're reading all this other stuff, but we're not actually, you don't spend much time in the Bible because you're reading all this other stuff. Sometimes just, you know, say, you know, I'm just going to read the Bible this week. Not that it's a sin, you know, to read old church literature. I'm sending it out and we'll continue to send it out. But just what's the Bible say? Let me calmly, patiently read the scriptures. And it warns us. So pray that you're accounted worthy to escape all these things. Means stay close to God, please him, overcome. Nobody's perfect, but show him that you have a great desire to be worthy to escape all these things. Some will be worthy to escape, others will not. So let us strive to make our calling and election sure.